from WNYC in New York. This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Well, it's happening, and though a few of the early reviews were disappointing, since it lacked the partisan stunts and hijinks of other televised proceedings, it still drew a crowd.
We are people who repeatedly uproot our lives, who risk and sometimes give our lives for this country.
That was former Ukraine Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch describing the role of American diplomats in her opening statement on Friday, day two of the impeachment hearings.
We are the dozens of Americans stationed at our embassy in Cuba and consulates in China who mysteriously and dangerously were injured and attacked from unknown sources. And we are Ambassador Chris Stevens, Sean Patrick Smith, Ty Woods, and Glenn Doherty. People rightly called heroes for their ultimate sacrifice to this nation's foreign policy interests in Libya. They represent each one of you here and every American. These courageous individuals were attacked because they symbolized America.
I think that if you are not moved by the testimony of Marie Yovanovitch today, you don't have a pulse.
That assessment offered by Chris Wallace of Fox News. The president also weighed in on Twitter during her testimony. Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff read her the tweet.
Everywhere Marie Yovanovitch went turned bad. She started off in Somalia. How did that go?
Schiff asked her to respond. Did things turn bad everywhere she went?
I mean, I don't think I have such powers, not in Mogadishu, Somalia, not in other places. I actually think that where I've served over the years, I and others have demonstrably made things better, you know, for the U.S. as well as for the countries that I've served in.
When asked, she said the tweets felt very intimidating.
Now, that enabled Schiff to then characterize that tweet as intimidating the witness or tampering with the witness, which is a crime.
Fox News' Brett Baer.
Adding essentially an article of impeachment real time as this hearing is going on.
That was Friday, up until our deadline. But before that, there was Wednesday.
I'm not here to decide about impeachment. That is not what either of us are here to do. This is your job.
That was William B. Taylor, who, along with fellow diplomat George Kent, testified on Wednesday at the opening of the impeachment hearings in the House. But actually, Taylor's audience on the committee mostly already knew where they stood on the central question at hand.
It seems you agreed, witting or unwittingly, to participate in a drama.
Take, for instance, the hostility from ranking Republican member Devin Nunes.
But the main performance, the Russia hoax, has ended, and you've been cast in the low-rent Ukrainian sequel.
So, no, the proceedings are not really for the committee members. They're for the audience beyond the Hill, for the 13.1 million viewers who at any given moment on Wednesday were tuned in, and who knows how many on Friday to any of the news channels carrying the testimony. Surely some minds among those millions might be open to persuasion?
Throughout the fall, many in the cohort of the American majority who disapprove of Trump have placed hope in the impeachment process for the salvation that the Mueller report failed to deliver. Specifically, hope that the public, especially the Republican public, confronted with irrefutable evidence of presidential malfeasance, would turn against Trump in such numbers that their elected representatives would have to act. Would have to.
There was a fair bit of concern about the Washington Post poll yesterday, just the magnitude of shift in numbers. That is concerning some Republicans close to the White House and leadership.
The trend line's really important, the independents are really important, and the fact that this process isn't over. We don't know what these open hearings are going to do to public opinion.
House Democrats clearly hope these public hearings will make it harder for Republican senators to stand by Trump.
On this point, some pundits and journalists invoke the Nixon era, when a fractured country tuned into televised hearings and came to agree about the seriousness of the Watergate scandal.
Back in 1973, public opinion had not yet turned against President Richard Nixon.
What did the president know? And when did he know it?
Televising the Senate Watergate hearings tipped the balance, in part by exposing the existence of secret Oval Office tapes.
More than a year passed between those hearings and Nixon's premature departure from office, but by the end, a clear majority of Americans supported exactly that. And so, the hope goes, if a divided country could, albeit slowly, reach a consensus then, why not now? Because, says Nicole Hemmer, author of Messenger of the Right, Conservative Media and the Transformation of American Politics, that hope springs from a false premise. She penned an op-ed to that effect in last weekend's New York Times.
I hate to be the downer in this moment, but, you know, I understand why people think that. The Watergate analogy is so strong when we think about impeachment, that if we just follow the exact same steps that Democrats followed in 1973 and 1974, we'll have the exact same conclusion. I mean, back in the days of Watergate, you had a public that watched four news networks, all of which were devoted to some form of objective reporting. You had a Republican Party that certainly included conservatives, but didn't have the kind of conservative base that we have today. And you certainly didn't have anything like Fox News or conservative talk radio to protect an embattled president.
Have you watched any of the coverage on Fox News?
I was actually watching on Wednesday on Fox News because I was curious. You know, Fox, just like the other networks, were carrying these hearings live. And that seemed to be a tricky proposition for the network because there would be all of this evidence being amassed that showed potential corruption by the president.
And Lindsey Graham told Trump supporters that it was tantamount to disloyalty to watch the hearings.
It is a threat to the presidency. I don't want to legitimize it. It's un-American. It denies the basics of due process.
And yet, I think the folks at Fox News knew that people were going to be tuning in. And if the people who normally watch your network are going to tune in, you want to have some control over what they see. And in fact, even though Fox News did carry the hearings live, what they did was they would put little pieces of information up on the screen just to make sure that their viewers understood the correct way to understand what they were hearing. And so a really good example of this is that Fox News put up three different quote-unquote facts about William Taylor. One was that the president had called him a never-Trumper. One was that the White House had accused him of triple hearsay, that he hadn't been anywhere close to the information. And one was that the Republican Party had said something like he wasn't trustworthy. And so this is how they're introducing this Vietnam War vet, Bronze Star winner, lifetime public servant, just so people know who are watching how to position him.
And so the fractured media is going to protect the public from unwanted facts.
Part of the public, because we've seen significant movement among Democrats and independents towards supporting both impeachment and removal. We haven't seen that same movement among Republicans, and that's really important because that's who those Republican lawmakers are listening to. Fox News plays an important role in making sure that everyone's on the same page, not just during the live hearings, but in all of the commentary that surrounds impeachment.
But Republicans are, what, less than a third of the electorate? You wouldn't know it, of course, thanks to the Electoral College and precision gerrymandering that the GOP was better timed to take advantage of than the Democrats were. But that said, once Republicans were the majority party, so there was a time when it could be moved by public sentiment.
Oh, absolutely. But the Republican Party has wholesale abandoned popular politics. I mean, in the days of the 1980s and the early 1990s, Ronald Reagan was winning landslide elections. George H.W. Bush had the highest approval ratings of any president on record. The Republicans in Congress sweep the 1994 elections with the popular vote. Popular politics worked for conservatives in the Republican Party during those 15 years. Then they start to abandon them.
So how did they go from a party that revered popular politics to one that rejected them?
They learned that they wouldn't necessarily pay a big price for rejecting popular politics. And there's two ways that we see this. In the mid-1990s, you have Newt Gingrich, who is in charge of Republicans in the House, and Bill Clinton, the Democratic president. And Newt Gingrich is trying out some different obstructionist policies. He shuts down the federal government twice. Mm-hmm.
didn't the Republicans pay a price for that?
They sort of paid a price for it. I mean, Bill Clinton is reelected. It's hard to say that that's a result of the government shutdown. But the public blamed Republicans for shutting down the federal government. And then a couple of years later, they move forward on the impeachment of Bill Clinton. At no time did the American public ever support the impeachment of Bill Clinton. That was clear not only by public polling, but in 1998, before impeachment hearings had started, but after the Starr report and all this stuff had been going on around impeachment, voters who would normally be voting for Republicans in a midterm election, just based on kind of the historical patterns, actually vote for Democrats instead as a pretty stern rebuke of Republicans moving forward on impeachment. What do? Then, after the election, they move forward with impeachment. That sort of insularity to public will should have cost them something. So what happens in 2000? They win the presidency and keep control of both houses of Congress.
George W. Bush obtained the presidency.
There was no political price paid in the 2000 election for all of the unpopular policies, the government shutdown, the impeachment of Bill Clinton. And yes, you can always put an asterisk next to the 2000 election, just like you can to the 2016 election. But that asterisk is part of the point. Mm-hmm. You don't actually need to win the popular vote in order to control the presidency. And actually, we're seeing a growing gap between the popular vote and the Electoral College vote in ways that undermine people's faith in a broader sense of democracy.
So let's talk about some of the ways in recent years that public sentiment has had no impact on the Republican Party. The one that comes to my mind is the gun control measure after the Sandy Hook massacre. The Senate voted it down.
Look at the polls, both after Sandy Hook and after any of the numerous mass shootings that the United States has experienced, the American people, including Republicans, by overwhelming majorities, 80, 90%, support different types of gun control. And you cannot get it through the Republican Party. You cannot get Republican support for it. And that's only one of these issues. Like, banning abortion is not something that the public supports. Overturning the Affordable Care Act, not something that the public supports. Restrictions on immigration, not something that the public supports. And then there are all of these political tactics, like the debt ceiling crises and sequestration. All of these government shutdowns and things that were happening during the Obama years, really unpopular policies, really unpopular politics. And what happens in 2016? Republicans control both the White House and both houses of Congress.
So you don't see a circumstance in which the Senate might be persuaded to consider removing the president?
You know, the president said during the campaign that he could shoot a person on Fifth Avenue and not pay a price. And people saw that as a piece of overblown rhetoric. It was actually a governing philosophy, and it is one that the Republican Party has signed on to. Using what we know about the past 3 to 4 years, there is not an imaginable scenario in which Donald Trump violates the Constitution and is held responsible by Republicans in Congress. That's not to say it can't happen, but time and time again, that line has been tested. We have watched as Donald Trump has set down loyalty test after loyalty test, and Republicans again and again have proven their loyalty. And in many ways, impeachment is the final exam, the way of getting all of that loyalty on board in order to protect the Trump presidency.
Nicole, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Sorry to be depressing.
I don't forgive you. Nicole Hemmer is a researcher at Columbia University and the author of Messengers of the Right, Conservative Media, and the Transformation of American Politics.
Coming up, the Watergate hearings were not exactly as history paints them. Just ask John Dean.
This is On the Media.